Slate's Negotiation Academy is brought to you by FedEx. FedEx does more than shipping. They offer businesses a range of valuable solutions. Explore the solutions at fedex.com/solutions that matter.
Hi, I'm Seth Stevenson.
And I'm Jill Barshay. Welcome to Episode 5 of Slate's Negotiation Academy. As you may recall, in Episode 4, we talked about physical tactics and time pressure.
Now we're going to talk about how to deal with jerks.
So the first jerky behavior you'll see across the table is classic yelling, fist pounding, obnoxious, boorish behavior.
Now, when someone's getting really angry with you, you don't want to let them bully you, but you also don't want to mirror their behavior. You don't want to yell back.
Our professor, Aaron Wallen at Columbia Business School, suggested calling them on it, saying, hey, we don't need to yell. We're here to calmly negotiate.
Seems like you're upset about something. Can we take a break?
So I paid a visit to Professor Donna Hittrich. She is a professor of corporate finance at Columbia Business School. But what's interesting about her is what she did beforehand. She used to be a major mergers and acquisition lawyer at Skadden Arps, a big Wall Street law firm. And then she negotiated M&A deals at JP Morgan and Credit Suisse, some big healthcare and pharmaceutical mergers you might have seen on the front page of the newspapers. She has a more indirect approach to this problem of yellers.
I usually try to kill them with kindness because I think all people at the end of the day are good. Some people it's hidden a little deeper than others. And I think once you meet that kind of fury with just being, not patronizing, but just being, you know, relaxed, I think people take a step back and realize they were being a little ridiculous.
So another ridiculous thing that people can do is to take a really extreme position or to make a totally insulting lowball offer.
Yeah, like offering $1 for something.
So what are you going to do if someone does that to you? Well, one thing you can do is say, what are you basing that on? What makes you think that $1 is a fair price for my new Mercedes?
Or the other thing you can do is just like before, say you're here to negotiate and that $1 is just not a reasonable way to negotiate.
That's not a starting point that's going to be productive for this negotiation.
But the more sophisticated approach to dealing with an extreme lowball offer is something negotiation nerds call re-anchoring. And we're going to show you how it works.
So let's imagine that Jill and I are a pair of impoverished journalists. It's not actually that much of a stretch. And we've decided to become roommates in this cheap, fifth-floor walk-up, roach-infested slum apartment in the East Village. So, Jill, here we are in our roach-infested apartment. It's our first day here. Do you want to figure out how we're going to divvy up the chores while we're living here?
Yeah, great idea. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking you should do all the chores while I sit in front of the TV and eat bonbons.
That's an interesting position to take, Jill. What makes you think that's a fair way to divvy up the chores?
Well, women have been oppressed for centuries, doing chores since the dawn of civilization. And I thought we should have a post-feminist apartment, and you should be the first man to spearhead that.
Okay, well, you know, I thought we were going to negotiate about this and come to an agreement. I don't think your starting point is really going to be a productive way to start this negotiation.
No, this is my position, Seth. You should do all the chores.
Jill, let's take a break and walk around the block and just talk about our lives a little, and then we'll come back to this a little bit later.
Seth, I don't have time for that. We're settling this now.
Okay, Jill. Well, you know, that division of the chores that you're suggesting, where I do all the chores and you eat bonbons in front of the TV, that's just really not the kind of agreement that I had in mind when I was thinking about negotiating our chore situation. You know, I think I've been getting a lot of freelance assignments lately. I'm kind of crushing it as a journalist. I'm really busy. Why don't I do one quarter of the chores? And you, because you're not really getting as many assignments, work's been kind of dry for you, why don't you do three quarters of the chores? So just to reiterate, I think I should do one quarter of the chores, and I think you should do the other three quarters of the chores. What do you say to that?
So what Seth just did here was something called re-anchoring, where he was not accepting my crazy lowball extreme offer. And then he had a counter offer. It's almost like the opening bid. And then he repeated it again and again. I'm going to do one quarter of the chores, one quarter of the chores, one quarter of the chores. And it's kind of reframing our whole negotiation and creating a brand new starting point.
So Jill took an extreme position. And in order to counter that and reframe the negotiation, I took maybe not quite as extreme a position, but I also took a very strong stance that was going to reframe the negotiation in my favor.
Now, what happens when your opponent refuses to budge or just simply won't negotiate with you?
Okay, so let's imagine Jill and I are going to split the massive profits from this podcast. Jill, what do you say we split these podcast profits 50-50? Seems fair, right?
No, I think I should get 80%.
Okay, what if you got 60 and I got 40?
80%.
70-30?
80%. So Seth kept ratcheting his number up, going closer to my number, but I wasn't budging.
I was negotiating with myself, and what I should have done is demand a concession from Jill each time I gave a concession.
Right, so you should never give two concessions in a row. Always get something back before you give something more. The most common and frustrating jerk problem you'll get across the table is a liar. And, you know, in our mock negotiations at business school, I felt these MBAs lied in many, if not most, of my negotiations. And it didn't even seem like an ethical lapse to them. It was just kind of a pragmatic thing that you need to kind of fib a bit to get the deal done.
And to be fair, a lot of fibs aren't crimes. I mean, you're allowed to sort of misrepresent what's most important to you, how much you really want that car or your, oh, I'm not that interested in that car. These are not crimes. These are part of negotiation.
Yeah, even in a real negotiation, if someone tries to sue you for bad faith in the negotiation, you're not going to get busted for lying about how important something was to you or that you didn't really care about that car. The only thing you'll really get busted for is lying about facts and figures. And it's even a gray area if you lie about another offer that you say you're getting. So Seth, what should you do when someone lies to you?
So you should call them on it, but you don't need to say, liar, liar, pants on fire. That's going to ruin the friendly tone of the negotiation.
Yeah, one of the things that Donna Hittrich says when she feels that someone's lying to her on the other side of the table, she says that's where research really pays off. And she has her own assessment of the facts and the figures and what they should be based on. So she'll mention her alternate information, like, well, my research said this, this, and this. Do I have that right? And she'll make it a question at the end.
Right. Don't do it in a threatening way, but if they're lying, they won't have evidence to back it up. You might be better off calling them on their lie by suggesting an if-then contingency.
So how would that work?
So let's imagine we're back there in our fifth-floor walk-up, roach-infested slum apartment, and we're divvying up chores again.
Hey, Seth, why don't you mop the kitchen floor? And when I come back partying tonight, I'll do the dishes.
Listeners, I don't believe Jill right now. I think she's going to get really drunk at the club, and when she gets back, she's not going to do the dishes. So instead of calling her on it, I'm going to suggest an if-then. Okay, Jill, I will mop the floor of the apartment, but if you don't do the dishes when you get back, if I wake up in the morning and the dishes are not done, you're going to pay the next 2 months of rent yourself. Agreed? Let's put that in writing and we can sign it. How does that sound?
I guess it might be risky doing the dishes after I come back tonight. Maybe I should do them now.
Sounds good to me.
So Donna Hittrich, the former M&A dealmaker, says she likes to find out ahead of time if she's going to be dealing with a chronic liar across the table.
I always like to, before I negotiate with people, have gone out to dinner with them, played golf with them, seen them in other settings. Because as you see people in other settings, it's very hard, at least in my experience, for people to compartmentalize. If you're a liar, you're a liar, whether it's on the golf course or in the boardroom. And I believe that's part of the due diligence process. So whenever I worked with clients and we would be doing a deal, we would try to go out with the other side and have dinner the night before or whatever, just to observe. I think it's an important thing to have an understanding of who you're dealing with on the other side.
So by knowing the character of the person that she's dealing with on the other side, she can kind of prepare herself for the lies when they start coming so that her blood doesn't boil and that she doesn't get derailed.
And you want to notice your heart rate and whether you're sort of heating up. Maybe you just need to take a break. Say, I'm going to go get a coffee. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Or start asking questions or talking about some other subject.
Right. Schmoozing is always safe ground. Now, what about a situation when the jerk is you? Sometimes you might be tempted to do something a little bit ethically dubious. What are your obligations? How do you prevent yourself from becoming the jerk at the table?
Well, and one time that you're really kind of tempted to be a jerk is when someone's asking you questions that you know you shouldn't be giving the answer to. We discussed in earlier episodes that you should never disclose to your opponent what your walkaway price is, or try not to be so specific about what your alternative is if the negotiation fails. Now, what happens if the person on the other side of the table asks you about that directly? Like, what is your walkaway point? Or what are you going to do if this negotiation fails? You might be tempted to lie.
Don't do it. Rather than lie, you should avoid answering the question. Just say, you know, that's a piece of information I'd like to keep to myself. Or say, you know, that's not material to this discussion.
But the real things that will keep you ethical and honest during a negotiation, hopefully your adversary as well, is the knowledge that you're both going to see each other again. Maybe you're both colleagues at an office. Maybe you're going to be business partners and dealing with each other again. And if it's found out that either one of you lied to each other during the negotiations so that you could grab a bigger chunk of the profits or a bigger chunk of the deal, it's just going to create bad blood and you're not going to be wanting to work together again.
Or maybe the deal that you're hammering out is something you're going to have to implement together in the future. And if you're going to have to work together to achieve the terms of this deal, you don't want to go into it souring the relationship with lies and deception.
Right. So let's revisit something we did a couple episodes ago when I was buying a tandem bike from Seth. Seth finds out from a mutual friend that I lied about wanting the bike right away, and I was able, by lying about it, I was able to knock $50 off the price of the bike. And so say Seth finds out about this.
Jill, a little bird told me that you were gloating about how you lied about needing my bike right away and you got me to knock $50 off the price for giving it to you later. You know, that's not so cool. You're dead to me now. We're not friends. Was that really worth the $50?
That's it for episode 5. In episode 6, we'll talk about how to close the deal.
You can send us feedback and questions at our email address, podcasts, that's with an S, at slate.com.
You'll find this and every past episode of the Negotiation Academy at slate.com/negotiation. Our executive producer is Andy Bowers. Our producer is Mark Phillips. And I'm Jill Barshay.
And I'm Seth Stevenson. Happy haggling. We'll talk to you next episode.